Chapter 4. The history of mankind is the history of the attainment of external power. Man is the tool-using, fire-making animal. From the outset of his terrestrial career, we find him supplementing the natural strength and bodily weapons of a beast by the heat of burning and the rough implement of stone. So he passed beyond the ape. From that he expands. Presently he added to himself the power of the horse and the ox. He borrowed the carrying strength of water and the driving force of the wind. He quickened his fire by blowing, and his simple tools, pointed first with copper and then with iron, increased and varied, and became more elaborate and efficient. He sheltered his heat in houses and made his way easier by paths and roads. He complicated his social relationships and increased his efficiency by the division of labor. He began to store up knowledge. Contrivance followed contrivance, each making it possible for a man to do more. All was down the lengthening record, save for a setback ever and again, he is doing more. A quarter of a million years ago, the utmost man was a savage, a being scarcely articulate, sheltering in holes in the rocks, armed with a rough-hewn flint or a fire-pointed stick, naked, living in small family groups, killed by some younger man so soon as his first virile activity declined. Over most of the great wildernesses of Earth he would have sought him in vain. Only in a few temperate and subtropical river valleys would you have found the squatting lairs of his little herds, a male, a few females, a child or so. He knew no future then, no kind of life except the life he led. He fled the cave bear over the rocks full of iron ore, and the promise of sword and spear. He froze to death upon a ledge of coal. He drank water muddy with the clay that would one day make cups of porcelain. He chewed the ear of wild wheat he had plucked and gazed with a dim speculation in his eyes at the birds that soared beyond his reach. Or suddenly he became aware of the scent of another male and rose up roaring, his roars the formless precursors of moral admonitions. For he was a great individualist, that original, he suffered none other than himself. So through the long generations, this heavy precursor, this ancestor of all of us, fought and bred and perished, changing almost imperceptibly. Yet he changed. That keen chisel of necessity which sharpened the tiger's claw age by age, and fined down the clumsy or chippest to the swift grace of the horse, was at work upon him, is at work upon him still. The clumsier and more stupidly fierce among them were killed soonest and oftenest. The finer hand, the quicker eye, the bigger brain, the better balanced body prevailed. Age by age, the implements were a little better made, the man a little more delicately adjusted to his possibilities. He became more social, his herd grew larger. No longer did each man kill or drive out his growing sons. A system of taboos made them tolerable to him, and they revered him alive, and soon even after he was dead, and were his allies against the beasts and the rest of mankind. But they were forbidden to touch the women of the tribe. They had to go out and capture women for themselves, and each son fled from his stepmother, and hid from her lest the anger of the old man should be roused. All the world over, even to this day, these ancient inevitable taboos can be traced. And now instead of caves came huts and hovels, and the fire was better tended, and there were wrappings and garments. And so aided, the creature spread into colder climates, carrying food with him, storing food until sometimes the neglected grass seed sprouted again, and gave a first hint of agriculture. And already there were the beginnings of leisure and thought. Man began to think. There were times when he was fed, when his lusts and his fears were all appeased, when the sun shone upon the squatting place and dim stirrings of speculation lit his eyes. He scratched upon a bone and found resemblance, and pursued it, and began pictorial art, molded the soft, warm clay of the river brink between his fingers, and found a pleasure in its patternings and repetitions, shaped it into the form of vessels, and found that it would hold water. He watched the streaming river, and wondered from what bountiful breast this incessant water came. He blinked at the sun and dreamt that perhaps he might snare it, and spear it as it went down to its resting place amidst the distant hills. Then he was roused to convey to his brother, that once indeed he had done so at least, that someone had done, so he mixed that perhaps with another dream almost as daring, that one day a mammoth had been beset, and therewith began fiction pointing a way to achievement and the august prophetic procession of tales. For scores and hundreds of centuries, for myriads of generations, that life of our fathers went on. From the beginning to the ripening of that phase of human life, from the first clumsy eelith of rudely chipped flint to the first implements of polished stone, was 2 or 3,000 centuries, 10 or 15,000 generations. So slowly, by human standards, did humanity gather itself together out of the dim intimations of the beast. And that first glimmering of speculation, that first story of achievement, that storyteller bright-eyed and flushed under his matted hair, gesticulating to his gaping, incredulous listener, gripping his wrist to keep him attentive, was the most marvelous beginning this world has ever seen. It doomed the mammoths, and it began the setting of that snare that shall catch the sun. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.